Good evening, Phakamile, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Great stuff. Phakamile, I don't think that I said anything particularly wrong or, you know, disingenuous in saying that, listen, we need to have this situation sorted out as soon as possible with a bus strike.
No.
Because, of course, we need people to get to and from work on a day-to-day basis. Where are we with the bus strike at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely, Goshwal. We, as the trade unions involved in this process, would ideally also like to see the situation resolved as soon as possible. No one is more affected by the strike than our members. For every day that the strike goes on, you must understand that they are being denied wages because it's a no-work, no-pay situation.
Mm.
Our members are also heavily dependent on the public transportation system. So the same inconveniences that ordinary commuters are experiencing with regards to the lack of public transport and having to fork out extra money for taxis, etc., those are the things that our members have to confer and deal with as well. Ultimately, we really do want the strike to be resolved. Unfortunately, though, we can't just settle for a deal for the sake of settling for a deal. Our members are very clear about the mandate that they gave to us. Besides a wage increase, which they demanded, there are two critical issues on the table which must be resolved. The one has to do with the dual driver or the second driver and his services, and the other has to do with the night shift allowance. And as long as the bosses in this sector refuse to engage meaningfully and negotiate in good faith, unfortunately, the strike will continue.
So in terms of that negotiation, I mean, where do we find ourselves at the moment? What is the holdup? Because, I mean, what you're asking for there and what you're talking about, presumably this would have been the subject of lengthy conversations with the employers in this instance.
Yes, absolutely. You'll remember, Goshwal, that we have had, besides the prior towards the strike, there was extensive CCMA intervention. Even after the strike, we had the CCMA intervening, and then we had the Department of Labor and Transport Ministers both in trying to intervene to try and bring us closer. The problem we're experiencing with the bus strike and the talks is that whilst we as unions have done everything in our power to meet the bus companies halfway, for example, our original demand was 12% in a one-year agreement. We have since, in the process of mediation, been contemplating, for example, a proposal of a 9% increase and a two-year agreement. The two critical issues around the alternative driver and their salary and the night shift allowance are the things that the employers are refusing to engage with. They have not moved at all compared to us. The offer that they placed on the table, in fact, that 9% offer that I'm telling you about, is an offer which the CCMA proposed. It wasn't proposed by the employers. The employers proposed an offer of 8% and 8.5% and a two-year agreement. And one of the problems that they proposed is that what they put on the table is that on the issue of alternative driver, they don't want to deal with that, and they don't want to deal with the night shift allowance. They want the situation to continue as is. So in other words, Goshwal, what the employers want is for drivers, the alternative driver, let's say, for example, you've got drivers who are driving long distance, so there's always an alternative driver.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the current system, under the current system, the second driver only gets paid at the point at which he's driving the bus. For that entire trip down to Cape Town, as far as the buses are concerned, he's off duty. Which is ridiculous because he's not off duty. He's working. He's not on holiday.
So while he's basically sitting in that bus waiting to obviously commence his shift, he's regarded as being off duty, which means...
off duty. I mean, Goshwal, that would be like your boss demanding that you must be at the station 5 hours early every day, but refusing not to pay you until you literally open your mouth and speak. What ridiculous nonsense is that?
Maybe I should join NUMSA.
Perhaps you should. Conversation for a different day. But that's ultimately what they're saying. And it's absurd in the extreme. The other issue is with regards to the definition of the night shift allowance.
Yeah.
The Basic Conditions of Employment Act stipulate that any worker who works from 6 p.m. onwards, between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m., they are supposed to get a night shift allowance. Now, the employers in this sector have defined for themselves what a night shift is, which is, by the way, in contravention of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. So in other words, they want us to help them to break the law. These are the conditions that are keeping us from meeting each other. You have bosses, on the other hand, who actually want to flagrantly abuse workers, abuse labor rights, and they want the unions to support them in this. And this is why we cannot make a move and make any progress in the strike, because whatever we might try and negotiate in terms of the actual wage percentage, our members have been clear that on the issue of the second driver and the night shift allowance, they want those systems to change, and the employers are refusing to budge on that. And unfortunately, this is where we are. And because of that disagreement, we now find ourselves not able to meet each other halfway, and talks, regardless of all the intervention from the state and from other parties, including the CCMA, we still can't find each other.
I mean, is there any possibility for resolution? Is there any way to predict how much longer this will continue? I know that this is obviously a negotiation, and if there was, an agreement on the table that you guys would, agree on with the employer, that for all intents and purposes, this particular strike would have been, something of the past, but it's continuing, and it's continuing for a reason. But I mean, is there any way for us to be able to predict and to say that, look, this is another week away, another month away? Is there any way to look at it in that way?
Look, at this point, we can't say how long the strike is going to be. We said it is an indefinite strike until the employers demonstrate a genuine commitment, not just to the employers, to the employees, but even to the commuters. I'm sure you've seen the footage of thousands of people suffering in queues because of the impact of the strike. And as far as we're concerned, these employers are not just being obnoxious towards workers, but to the communities as a whole. They don't take them seriously. Because if they did, they would actually take what we're saying seriously. Around the issue, for example, on the night shift allowance, do you know that bus drivers work in 18-hour shifts? Their shift starts at 3 in the morning, Gershwal, and ends at 8 p.m. at night. Now, as far as I'm concerned, or anybody is concerned, that person who is driving a bus when they've been working for 18 hours is a danger on the roads. And you would think that the bus companies would think about that and care about that, but they don't. The industry is based entirely on extreme exploitation of workers. Bus drivers sleep on buses because of the way that the employers treat them. How good is your night's sleep when you're sleeping on a bus, Gershwal?
Luckily that was an inconvenience I had years back, and I wouldn't want to repeat anytime soon.
Imagine if you're a driver, that's your life.
Yeah,
if you work for a bus company. We are trying to force employers to modernize. We're trying to force employers to recognize that their employees are not animals, they're human beings who should be treated with dignity. And our members are clear that these issues, which were issues last year, must be resolved this year. And they're not willing to go back to work until employers take these critical issues seriously.
I hear you, Phakamile, but of course there was also another issue that we were supposed to discuss tonight, and it was actually the primary focus of tonight's conversation. I just took that as an opportunity to hijack you and talk about this particular issue around the bus strike, and thanks for entertaining it. But I mean, obviously the other big news that we've received in the course of the week was Caster Semenya and the IAAF. Not really Caster Semenya directly, but we know who this rule, inverted commas, or amendment to the rules, is directed at. And that's, of course, our Caster Semenya. And what we find now is that the IAAF have come around and they said that, look, there's a particular threshold of testosterone that should be in present in women for them to be able to be allowed to legally compete within international events such as the Olympics and so forth and so on. Now, I'm no medical expert, but there does sound like, at the very minimum, on the face of it, some form of discrimination, considering that this question has been asked in the past. And I think they found that, yes, Caster does have an increased amount of testosterone as compared to, the average woman, but it's far below that of a man. And what is NUMSA have to say about this issue?
As far as NUMSA is concerned, this is just blatant racism and sexism on the part of the IAAF. We issued a statement this morning condemning in the strongest terms the position that IAAF has taken against Custer. It's very obvious that these regulations have been created with her in mind. When you analyze the report, the so-called research that the IAAF is basing it on, first of all, there was an Indian athlete. You'll forgive me, her name has... I've just forgotten her name
fine.
But there was an Indian athlete who took this matter to the Court of Arbitration of Sport, and she won. The Court of Arbitration found that there is absolutely no evidence to back up the IAAF assertion that higher levels of naturally produced testosterone in women give female athletes an advantage. That's a fact. So the question, therefore, is on what basis have these regulations been coughed up? And as far as we're concerned, it's very clear that this has been designed with Custer in mind, especially when you think of the fact that these regulations have been restricted to just mild distance long runners, which is where Custer falls in. Mm. And interestingly, the same research that the IAAF is basing this information on has also found that female athletes in the shot put arena and javelin throwers benefit from increased levels of testosterone. And yet you don't see the IAAF demanding that those female athletes must be subjected to hormone replacement therapy, only Custer. So clearly this is an attack on Custer Semenya. This is an attack on her because as an African female athlete, she is dominating in this space. And we know that the IAAF has had an agenda against her for a very long time. And this is just them attempting in another very dubious way to try and attack Custer Semenya. And we're calling on our members, we're calling on the working class in general to defend our athletes, because that is exactly what this is. There is no science behind it. It's just innuendo and dubious pseudoscience, actually, that they're basing this research on. And we really need South Africans to stand up and defend Custer Semenya in her time of need.
Well, Pakameda, I hear you there, and I think a lot of South Africans would be on board with you on that one. But I think that part of what the concern would be is, A, what do we do? And I mean, specifically, and I mean, I'm looking at NUMSA in this instance, as a locally based trade union. And I'm not saying that I'm very, very fully aware that you have international allies, you have international partners, in key spaces, and yourselves have very strong voices. But I mean, what is it that we do? Because as much as I'm outraged myself, similar to how you would be, because we do know that Custer has received extremely poor treatment, both from the sporting bodies as well as the public, as well as the media, you know, in this particular instance. What is it that we actually do to help in this instance? Because I feel pretty much powerless, and I'm sitting behind the mic at 7:02. So how does your ordinary citizen feel that's sitting at home and thinking that this is a ruling of the IAAF? It's an international sports body that decides who gets to compete and who doesn't get to compete, what is allowed as, I don't know, a legal substance and an illegal substance.
Well, I think for one, the work that you're doing right now, Gershaw, is going a long way towards assisting by conscientizing your listenership about this situation, about this gross abuse of power by the IAAF and their rampant racism. We are helping to conscientize South Africans, to conscientize the working class, to defend Custer. And I think that's the most important thing right now. You're correct to say in the past, Custer has not really been treated well with respect to this issue. And I think it's very important that every single South African must rally behind her and support her and show that we reject the findings of the IAAF and we support her. I think that's definitely the first starting point. Secondly, as NUMSA, we've called on SASCOC to do everything in their power to challenge this decision. We've seen that the Court of Arbitration responded to this challenge positively by lifting the ban on that on Dirty Chand, the Indian athlete who took this issue up with the Court of Arbitration. So we're calling on SASCOC to do the same thing, to utilize all their power and their resources, with of course the backing of South Africans, to make sure that Caster gets her day in court so that she can challenge this ruling. And I think also it's time for us to have a conversation, even if it means where we threaten the IAAF in the sense where we threaten to pull our athletes. I don't see why we shouldn't start to have that conversation. I mean, who are these people that they should blatantly in 2018 practice such rabid racism? We shouldn't allow them to get away with it. And we should be fearless in denouncing and calling this what it is. There is no scientific basis for what they're saying. This is purely racism. I mean, I was listening last week. There were several sports scientists who came out to condemn this decision because it's not actually based on real science. So why are we allowing the IAAF to do this to one of our own? We are not victims. We have more power than we realize. And I think if we all were to unite and stand up and demonstrate our support for Caster, these people will have no choice but to back down.
I mean, I think part of the problem, Phakamile, and I hear you there, is that, you know, let's say, for example, the bus strike that we started the conversation on. In that instance, I would say that the workers, and please, just give me an opportunity to explain. I'm not trying to imply that people are powerless or that we don't have an impact. But I mean, part of the issue is that, you know, the workers in this instance, you know, with the bus strike have power, because guess what? It has impact on public transport. It has impact on society at large, South African society at large, you know, and so forth and so on. So therefore, you have leverage to negotiate. Whereas, when it comes to the IAAF, pretty much like FIFA or the IRB or any one of these international sporting, organizations, what they will turn around is to say that, listen, you guys, basically, we in charge, someone needs to regulate what happens in the particular sports. It's not a democracy, inverted commas. And therefore, what we're calling is that we're saying that, listen, this year is our opportunity to say that this is, you know, what would be deemed as fair and what is deemed as unfair. And as deeply unfair as it might be, they have the final word on it. I mean, are we able to exert sufficient pressure, both as a nation, both through SASCOC and all these other organizations that we might have, and even on a governmental level, to the IAAF, to say that, listen, guys, you need to stop this nonsense now. Let the woman compete. She has been great for the sports. She has been great for the nation at large, and you should just leave her be.
I think ordinary workers have more power than they realize. And this is something that the working class in South Africa is slowly starting to accept and recognize. Even with our strike, for example, last week on the 25th of April, there were many, many people, many detractors, many critics who said it would never happen, we'd never get the numbers, people wouldn't mobilize, people wouldn't pitch, people wouldn't participate. But we were consistent about our message because we were telling the truth. I mean, workers are not stupid, just like South Africans are not stupid. We see through what the IAAF is doing. We know they're being racist. And we should take our power back. These institutions depend on us. They depend on us as consumers. They depend on us to purchase their products. They depend on us to watch and to be viewers and to be active participants in supporting the sport. If we threaten our support, or if we threaten to withdraw our support, that will have an impact. If we demonstrate and we protest as a nation and show our dissatisfaction with how our athlete has been treated, that will have an impact. Because Caster is not the only victim of the bullying of the IAAF. Dirty Chand of India is one of those, and I suspect there are many, many other athletes who have experienced this kind of bullying at the hand of the IAAF. It's time that we remind these agencies and these institutions where the real power lies. And that will only happen when we mobilize and unite behind a common cause. In the case of Caster, every South African citizen has a reason to feel proud of who she is and what she represents. We have a duty, therefore, to speak out and condemn the IAAF for what they're doing. We should not allow them to hide behind the science. We should call a thing a thing and say to them, you're lying to us when you claim that the science is backing you up. There's no science here. There's just racism, and we're calling you out and we're exposing you for it. Let's not forget that the IAAF right now is mired in controversy under the leadership of, I think his name is Leonard Cole, Mr. Cole, I just remember that surname Cole, who, by the way, is implicated in the Russian doping scandal because it's alleged that he knew long in advance that Russian athletes were doping. So it's interesting that the same organization, which was slow to respond where there was actual evidence of doping, is responding in this way, where there is no evidence of doping, where we have an athlete who performs and competes in a clean way. She's not abusing drugs or substances. She is naturally gifted. And now, because she is dominating and she happens to be African and female, they want to now destroy her by coming up with this nonsense that testosterone is the reason why she's doing what she's doing. And I think we must just be fearless about adopting this position. Ultimately, I do believe that we will prevail in convincing them to see things the right way.
Just as a final question, and I'm going to make it a double barrel so that you can deal with both of them, because we're going to leave it at that because I need to open up lines. Two things I'd like you to deal with for me, Phakamile, is that, I mean, you keep on going back to the issue of race having a role to play in this one, and I think that especially in South Africa and our very diverse understandings of the issues related to race, if you can just clarify how we get to that particular conclusion in the first instance, and second of all, also what NUMSA will be then doing, going forward in this particular issue. Is there anything in particular, any particular campaign that people can support or and so forth and so on, in terms of the action that NUMSA would be taking on this issue?
Sure. I mean, on the issue of race, Gershaw, it is why we say that it's pseudoscience. Is that if the IAAF was really consistent and truthful and genuine about what it's doing, then this, then these conditions would apply to all athletes. They wouldn't just apply to Caster Semenya in that particular bracket of running which she competes in. The javelin throwers and the shot put throwers would also be subject to these rules. This is why we say that it's racist. And secondly, anybody who understands our context will know that we have a long history where science was used to justify the unjustifiable. So that's why it's easy for us to actually pick out the BS, if you'll forgive me for using that term, in this instance, you know? Mm. And thirdly, as NUMSA, we have already been speaking and engaging with our gender structures. NUMSA has a gender structure in all the different regions all over the country, where the plans where discussions are taking place in different regions for us to take some kind of action, whether it's a picket or a protest, to defend Caster. And once we have finalized those arrangements, we will certainly communicate them to the public. And we certainly hope that even the listenership of 702 will join us in the struggle, because I think all of us as South Africans, or at least the majority of us, are outraged by this ridiculous decision by the IAAF.
Thank you so much for your time, Phakamile, and all the best to you. And, and hopefully two things I hope for coming out of this conversation is that, yes, we do see some fruitful results for whatever action is taken against the IAAF, especially with this particular move. And, of course, that bus strike that you and I started talking about, that it gets resolved, because I think that both you and I can agree that everyone loses out in the process. And the sooner it's resolved, the better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Gershaw.